you remember last week, there was the feeding of the 5,000 miracle. So Jesus is spending 71 verses in John doing a miracle and then talking about it in a lot of different ways. So this is one of the ways that he's talking about it. As my professor would say, questions, comments, observations. Yes. Why he didn't answer the first question that they asked. Because he's a good teacher. He only answers the questions that he comes up with. because most likely these folks would have been coming from the other side of the lake, or at least from kind of far away. And they didn't know how he got there. So we had two miracles last week. The first had to do with the feeding. The second had to do with Jesus kind of walking on water, running on water, and then somehow the ship just shows up in Capernaum. They want to know how that happened. And he doesn't, he's like, John doesn't answer those miracle questions. Yeah, Thea. Yeah, I think that has something to do with it. I don't think that he's dualist and that he thinks like physical needs are things we shouldn't take care of or bad or anything like that. But I think that he's maybe talking more about the way that we live more so than what we do right this very second or what we need right this very second or think we need. So I do think that he's trying to turn folks toward this idea of a lifestyle change in some ways and move them away from this idea that this is a guy who can just like magically pull bread and fish out of a hat. So he's not a magician. He's a teacher in that respect. Yeah, Sharon Lee. Yeah, I think that he's kind of almost chastising them. Because I think that he sees the folks as people who are coming back to him not because of his teachings or because of who he is, but because he made a bunch of bread happen somehow. And people are hungry. And if you've got, someone who can provide for you every day, that would be great to have in your back pocket, you know? Yeah, Meg. That's really great. The air is nutritious in churches. Folks were practicing for a piece of music that was played during the funeral, they came in and practiced on Friday night. One of them is Emily Donegan, which many of you know. She grew up Catholic in the church, and she stepped into the church, and she said, "I love the smell of old churches." And I asked why, because usually people complain about the smell of our church. And she said, there's just something different about them. And that's really wonderful. The air is nutritious. Yeah, Carla. Yeah, spoilers. I think what's happening ultimately, because there's 71 verses in this passage, Jesus tells this, the meaning of that parable, or the meaning of the miracle, like 5 different ways. I think it's because folks learn a lot of different ways. And he's trying to help them understand something that's really, really, really hard to understand. You know, we've been working on this for 2,000 years and are still trying to grasp at what this means, this concept of eternal life and a life worth living and the importance of faith communities. And it's not an easy answer, maybe even for Jesus. Maybe that's why he rambles on here. I don't know. Yeah, Wayne. When we hear the truth as it's told from a number of different voices, Christy. Yeah, yeah. Like, how much is enough? What does Jesus have to do to prove whatever he's trying to prove? That's a really interesting question. Yeah, Andrea. Not in John, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we remember the Lord's Prayer. You know, Jesus teaches his disciples to pray, give us today our daily bread, which is a very tangible thing, and then forgive us our trespasses. That's heavy. I mean, like, that's existential stuff. I mean, that's life stuff that requires a lot of thinking and feeling and feelings and thinkings that we don't want to necessarily connect with all the time. So even in the prayer that he teaches, he reminds us that we do need spirit, we do need physical things, but we're spiritual beings. Yeah. There is something about the manna here, which will come up. And if you're not familiar with the manna story, it's from Exodus chapter 16. The people, the Hebrew people, have left the land of Egypt, and they are now wandering in the desert. And they start complaining to Moses because. Saying that, why have you led us out into the desert to die? At least when we were in captivity in Egypt, we had meat to eat and bread. And it says that God hears the complaints of the people, and a big flock of quail descend on them. And then it like rains or flakes this weird stuff called manna. Manna, and the word in Hebrew means, what is it? But it was like this flaky stuff that they gathered together, and you could only gather enough for one day. And that's how, in the stories, the people of Israel were sustained in the wilderness by this like flaky residue stuff. I don't know. What is it? I mean, like, they were wondering that too. So our lectionary does give us 5 weeks of this Bread of Life discourse, the entire chapter of John minus a few verses. In the first 21 verses, we have the two miracles, the feeding of the 5,000, and a miracle perhaps of convenience. Jesus needs to get from a mountain to Capernaum, and there's a long tradition of these two miracles being tied together. So Jesus walks on water / teleports Star Trek style to Capernaum. This chapter focuses on the feeding experience. And then Jesus spends this and the next 3 Sundays trying to explain kind of what we've talked about. Here, Jesus is perhaps accusing folks of following him around just to meet their material needs. Specifically being hungry here. Because these folks who are in Capernaum right now were satiated the day before. He says something important here that I think the Gospel of John hinges on. This and one other verse in this chapter. He says, "Do not work for perishable things like food that spoils. Rather work for eternal things, something that Jesus will provide," he says. The folks ask what that looks like or how that works, because Jesus isn't making a lot of sense. Jesus responds that the work involves believing in the one that God has sent, referring to himself. The crowd starts talking about manna from this ancient story in Exodus 16, because that was a tangible thing. Still, they're focusing on tangible things. And again, Jesus perceives that they're looking for something material, more bread, maybe some quail, in the form of another miraculous feeding. But Jesus says that the bread of heaven does not doesn't feed the world so much as it gives life to the world. I think that those are two important distinctions. The bread of heaven doesn't feed the world, it gives life to the world. And then he says, "I am the bread of life." This is, for Bible nerds, the "I am" statements in Greek are really important in the Gospel of John. And this is the first time Jesus uses this "I am" statement in reference to being the bread of life. And you think about all of the things he could have said. "I am the good shepherd, I am a king, I am fill in the blank." He chose to say, "I am the bread of life." I'm going to stick to one point here that probably is actually 3, but I'm telling you it's one. This message, the message of this discourse has to do, I think, with materialism, with belief, and ultimately with purpose. There's something for Jesus kind of uncouth about materialism, the drive for more and more consumption. It never really satisfies. The folks who came had just eaten their fill the day before. We're back the very next day. Everything material that the world has to offer ultimately runs out, is unsustainable for us, ultimately unsatisfying, perhaps alienating, or something that makes us restless or fearful or even defensive. After all, how segmented are we as a people based on our educations or our incomes or the size of our houses or where we vacation or the cars we drive? What about the toys we have as adults, you know? Makes me think about this a lot. At no time have these things ever brought the world together. So Jesus calls on folks to believe in a higher thing. Things that don't spoil, catch fire, or get cut due to downsizing. The reason why we have 3 more weeks of this discourse, I think, is because this is something that's really hard to explain. And so Jesus tries to explain it a number of different ways. As I was trying to think about how this works in kind of a modern context, I took a crack at it. In our community, there's a person that grows nearly all of the food that her family needs for the year. And her garden is substantial beyond measures. They have chickens and livestock. They barter a lot of the stuff that's grown with other area folks who grow things. And these are material things. Pickles, it's a material thing, you know. Corn, canned corn is a material thing. Elderberry syrup is a material thing. But this doesn't have to be done to sustain the family. They could easily drive down to Lantman's or to Shaw's or wherever and buy their groceries there. Rather, for her, it's a lifestyle choice. One that allows her to make her carbon footprint smaller, that makes her go outside even when it's hot and sticky, that makes her care for things, and that gives her good spirits because she gets to see things grow. She feels like she's providing because she is doing this for her family and for those around her. I don't think that she grows pickles because she really likes pickles. I think she grows pickles. She grows cucumbers, rather. Wouldn't that be great? No. Just cut out the process. Because that's a lifestyle choice. To live close to the land, to cut down on carbon footprint, to grow things for her family. I think that's the difference here. The difference between the need for our consumption and the lifestyle choices that we make as human beings. I think Jesus here is calling on the folks to examine those life choices, regardless of what social status his crowd had. What truly guides their thoughts and their actions, our thoughts and our actions. What do they believe in? What do we believe in? Can they believe in a God that loves relentlessly, loves inclusively, and provides not only their daily bread, but purpose and calling along with that. As we finish up here, I ask you to consider something this week. Try taking some time to figure out what the two or three things that guide your thoughts and actions most. Think about where you spend your money or your time, and where your mind is most of the time. Family is an obvious one, but not universal. Care for the land, again, is one, but again, not universal. Maintaining health is common to some. You get the idea. Having more stuff, that's a popular one as well. And then as you're thinking about it this week, write them down. Try to identify, those two or three things that guide who you are and why you do what you do. I think it's an interesting exercise. Perhaps easy for some, challenging for others. But I think it's insightful nonetheless, just to kind of take inventory. So I ask that God bless us as we explore those things that are most important to us this week. May God also keep you cool this week, because it's going to be a hot one. Amen.